I'm Kumi Taguchi and I host a TV show in Australia called Insight, which is unlike any other.
In 5, 4, 3, 2...
Every week in the same room, we have dozens of guests telling their stories about one shared issue.
There definitely was three people in my marriage.
I started an affair with this man.
From sex and relationships to health, wealth and grief.
Dad, there's been a shooting at the elementary school.
And there's always a guest whose story stays with me.
I actually had guilt for not killing someone.
And I'm left feeling there's so much more I want to ask them. I often wonder, where are they now? So that's what I do here. I go back and I dig a little deeper. This is Insightful. In this episode, I'm catching up with Faith Agugu. Faith is one of those very rare guests who's appeared on two separate episodes of Insight. She shared her story around her quest to become a mum in a show about delayed motherhood.
At the age of 45, I was standing on my balcony and I decided that I was going to stop trying to have a child. And I just made the choice that not every woman was meant to be a mother.
And she also spoke about her views on ageing on an episode we did on loving life as we grow older.
There's an African proverb that says, when an old person dies, a library dies with them. In my culture, the oldest person in the room is the person that everyone wants to be.
These days, Faith has a psychotherapy practice and she runs a group for women over 50, redefining ageing and supporting women. I know this is going to be a big, juicy chat, so we're starting it off with a cup of tea. And Faith being Faith has brought the tea set. You've brought this beautiful yellow teapot and two beautiful cups.
I absolutely love tea. I guess it's just growing up in England, for me, tea was always about comfort. You know, it was always about comfort. If anything went wrong, you had a cup of tea. And I don't drink as much black tea anymore, but I do love that nice, beautiful, warm feelings you get with a warm beverage. So now I have a turmeric and ginger, and that's my mid-morning sort of thing. I just wanted to bring that for us so you and I can share this.
Thank you so much. I'm opening the pot. Oh my gosh, and I can see this chunks of fresh ginger, slices of that beautiful orange turmeric. Mm.
Lovely. Oh my god, I'm so hanging out for this.
Oh, me too. Yes. Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Where has home been for you? I know you live by the beach now, but where's home been over the years?
Oh, that's such a lovely question, you know, because it's not one that I can answer simply, but it's evocative for me and I'll explain why. But home has been Nigeria, where I was born to the age of 9. I was separated from my family and then I went to the UK to meet my family for the first time at the age of 9. And then I left the UK at 25 and came to Australia. So I've been here for 32 years. And the reason why I said the question was evocative is that I have never returned back to Nigeria and I made the decision this year, it'll be 50 years since I left, that I'm going back. I cannot put it off for another year.
Have you had a sense of needing to go back?
I've had the sense many times over the years. I go through stages of having the longing, and then life gets in the way and then I'll forget about it. Then a few years later, the longing will come again. So it's been backwards and forwards, but there's just been this hole. You know, think about this missing jigsaw piece and I've just had that yearning to fill it in. And I think that this is what this journey is going to be about. My story was that my family left Nigeria when I was the age of 1 to go to the UK. For my father was studying, so my mother and my brother went. And I was left with some people to look after me. The first person that was looking after me was loving and wonderful and beautiful. She got sick. The next lot of people that looked after me were very abusive. So what I internalized was, I must be so worthless and such a bad person for my family to leave me behind. That was something that I've had to do so much work to unravel that and really let that one go.
Do you remember that? Like, do you remember that thing of, oh, I'm back with my family?
Look, I remember it so well. Like, I think from the age of 6 till 9 when I met them, I had this Polaroid of them, because remember, this was like 50 years ago. So I had this little Polaroid and I would always take it everywhere with me. And I would say to my guardians then, when are they coming, you know. I was on the plane on my own going to the UK and I had my photo. And I remember getting to Heathrow and I remember that they were a little bit late and there was somebody standing there with me holding my hand, waiting for them. And I looked at the phone. I remember they kind of stepped forward and I looked at the phone and I saw them and I just ran, bolted towards them.
Oh, my.
It was really beautiful.
Faith, you have this wonderful femininity and strength about you. Where did that come from?
My mother is a very strong woman and she's also very feminine. She's very much, I guess, maybe old school. People will, you know, consider she's the sort of person that loves you through nurturing. She puts so much love in the food that she makes for you and the way that she cares for you. You feel it. It's palatable. You can really taste it. And when I go back home, one of the things my mother does is she makes sure she makes two or three of my favourite dishes. So when I arrive back to London, that I can choose. And that sense of caring for the people you love, I think it's a feminine quality to want to care for the people you love. So I think I get quite a lot of it from her. But I also feel my innate nature is being feminine and I'm very comfortable in my femininity. I love my femininity. I love being a woman. I actually really love being a woman.
When I first met you, it was on an episode about delaying motherhood and you told us about your dreams to become a mum. When did your biological clock tick the loudest?
From about the age of 37, you know. So when I gave up the idea of having a child, I was just about to turn 45. But I remember at 37, when it just came, it was so loud and it was so hard for me to kind of ignore. And at that particular time, I wasn't in a relationship. So it was really this scramble to try and find the perfect father for my children. And soon after that, I did meet a very beautiful man, you know, who I would have thought would have made a beautiful father, but he was very clear that he didn't want to have children. And I found that very heartbreaking because I tried all that I could to manipulate and change his mind. And at the time, it didn't feel like manipulation because I was so driven by the desire that I didn't think it was manipulation. I thought I was doing what was best for both of us. And I thought that surely he would want to be a father and he would be such a great father. Why wouldn't he want to do that with me?
Mm.
And I think I internalized it, but it wasn't. It was his desire not to have children because of some of the experiences he had, you know, and I was trying to override that with my desires.
How did you work through that?
It was really difficult. For a long time, I felt really depressed around it. Seeing my friends starting to have children, you know, and there were just so many of them. Well, pretty much most of the women that I was close to at the time were having children. And that was so painful. It was excruciating. I wanted to be so happy for them, and I was. But there was a part of me that was going through a lot of grief that this was now becoming something that was slipping out of my reality. I remember waking up, I was on the balcony of my apartment with the partner that I had been trying to have a child with, and I just realised that it was too late. And I just had this moment of clarity which said, you're going to be 45. If you have a child, by the time they're 10, you're going to be 56 or 57 by the time you get pregnant. When they're 20, you're going to be X. And I just got the reality check that I don't know if I've got the patience, the energy to be a good mother at this stage. I know that some women do become mothers later and then they're great. I didn't know if I did. I came to the conclusion that, no, I don't think I could give my child the very best becoming a mother at this stage in life. And even though it was painful, there was a relief in giving up that struggle, that fight. You know, there was such a relief.
The idea of motherhood, we see it as being a mother yourself.
Mm.
Do you see that idea of motherhood as not just necessarily having your own children?
Having come through this process, I experienced motherhood in so many different ways now. You know, I think even making the choice to be a psychotherapist, it wasn't a conscious choice around mothering, but I can see that to an extent it is mothering.
Wow.
You know, so I think there's a lot of ways of being a mother, but there's also bigger ways of being a mother. And at the moment I'm doing a spiritual process, which I'm just loving. It's making me feel really, really grounded. And one of the things that the teacher asks us to do is imagine being a mother to the world. Imagine being a mother to the people that we meet. Imagine being a mother to our clients, to the people in the street. How would we change the way we approach them or the way we view them if we had that mentality of, I'm a mother to everybody?
when you had that sort of light bulb moment on the balcony about not having children and feeling like you really had left it too late for yourself, did that lead to a sort of reinvention in your own life and how you saw your future?
It was actually quite exciting. Once I got past the grief, because I had to really honour the grief, I felt excited because I suddenly realised that all the decisions I made from now on were going to be just for me. And that, for even those selfish ones, it actually felt liberating. I could travel anywhere, any time. I love travel.
Did other sort of inventions of what you might do, how you might work, come into your mind?
It was a world of possibilities, to be honest. And, you know, and thinking about focusing on the things that I love, you know, I've always loved different business ideas, and the fact that I could actually go ahead and experiment and not have to worry about, oh, what if it didn't fail? What if it failed and I lost the money and that money was for my child? And just to suddenly, you know, really change the axis of my life, really. I went to uni for the very first time at 51. And that's after closing a fashion business that I had for 14 years. I would never have thought that I would have done that. But I realised that I needed to do something different. And I think what I see is most women make choices around the career around money. Finding a career that's going to pay well so that I can pay for the school fees, look after my growing family or the family I planned. And then they get to midlife and they realise now that they can change and select a career that actually meets their dream and their passion. And that's why I get so excited when women come to that place, because suddenly, like me with the not having children now, I can make the choices around just me. A lot of women come to that stage, their kids have grown up, the focus is not around that. Now they can go, oh, that idea that I had in my early 20s that was impractical then, I can now pursue that. And we can see so many amazing examples of women that went back to, you know, uni at a certain age. Certainly I'm an example of that, but women that started career. And we know that women reach their career peak 55 to 65. That's when most women actually change and they're the most happiest, they're most productive at that time. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing and flies against everything you think and read about sort of invisibility and no longer
relevant. Yeah.
That's extraordinary. Yeah. And also it makes sense to me.
It makes absolute sense.
Where do we get it wrong?
I think it's about commodity and about selling stuff. You know, I think a lot of people have a lot to gain by keeping women insecure and making women continuously chase after this unattainable thing called youth. We've all been young. We've been young. We've done that. But now we're in a different stage. And I think we get told that if we allow ourselves to age or to have the physical signs of aging, that we've let ourselves down in some way, that it's a failure in some way. And that if we were really on top of our game, we would do absolutely everything to hold on to youth and to keep looking young. I think that's ridiculous and doesn't serve women. I always say the women in their 70s are the ones that I most admire. That attitude that I spent my life turning myself into a pretzel to please everyone around me and it never worked, it never served me. I'm not going to do that anymore. I love that. You know, I really love that.
I wanted to talk about menopause. I feel like it's a conversation that's becoming more common. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, 100%. The first thing is always around conversation, because we can't change anything we don't acknowledge. And I think what makes it difficult for women is it is shrouded in secrecy and there's almost like a taboo and a stigma around it. So the first thing is for us to change that, normalize it. 50% of the population is going to go through menopause.
Right?
It's not rare. I went through my own menopause and my menopause was a medically induced menopause. And that's because I had a hysterectomy. And when you have a hysterectomy, they take out your ovaries. I was told that we're going to keep one of the ovaries in so you won't go into medically induced menopause. About a month after I had my hysterectomy, I started to get the signs of menopause. So I was kind of catapulted in it. I hadn't had a single conversation with anybody about menopause. So I actually had no idea what I was going through. So it was a little bit of a shock. But what I've seen now is that's changed so much, where there are many, many conversations around menopause. There's so many amazing facilitators and coaches now that specifically speak to menopause. And there's also a lot of policies, you know, and legislation now coming in the workplace to support women around menopause, because we lose about 10% of our talent. That's women in midlife going through menopause symptoms that leave the workplace because they can't talk about it. So once we start to have the conversations and then bringing in things like leave, if we can have mental health leave put in place or special leave put in place for the women that are going through that so that they can have those, or they can make the choice of working from home on the days that they're having particularly severe symptoms. Just things like that, really simple things, you know, but we can just start there.
One of the things I also wanted to chat to you about, which popped into my mind when we were talking about that career reinvention and you can be whoever you are. The flip side of that is that women over 55 is the fastest growing homeless group of people.
Yeah. That gives me, when you said that, that just gives me goose pimples. I get so, I get quite sad, you know, because the reasons why women fit that demographic is not because they haven't worked hard or they've neglected their career. So a lot of the time it's around divorce. And the women maybe spent most of their lives supporting their partners to build their career. And then in the divorce, the women come off shortchanged. The women don't have super. For whatever reason, they may have lost their home. So a woman who's worked all of her life, brought up all her children, children have left, suddenly divorce, she loses her home, now she's homeless. Or she's unable to find work, now she's homeless. And that's what makes me so sad, because usually the circumstances are beyond her control. So we have to stop blaming them or shaming them around it. And a lot of the women, we've heard of stories of women staying, sleeping in their car because they're too embarrassed to tell any of their friends or family that they're homeless.
You mentioned shame. How pervasive is shame and how difficult is it to overcome?
Shame is, on this vibrational scale, shame is right down the bottom. It's the most damaging emotion that we can have and to hold on to. So when someone comes in with shame, I try and get them out of shame as quickly as possible, shift them into anger. Anger's good. The shift into anger is good. Shame is corroding, and it's a really hard one because it's kind of paralyzing. Because what it's saying is that you're not good enough. Right at the very core of it, something about you is broken, defective, and not worthy. And if we sit in that, it leads to depression. There's so many things it leads to. But it just means that we don't challenge it and we really internalize it.
We don't challenge it as in we accept that what we're saying about ourselves is true.
It's true. We sit in it and we believe it to be true, and that's why it's so damaging. And I had a wonderful mentor once that said to me, I would rather you blamed me than you sit in shame.
Wow.
Because it's so corrosive.
Turning the sort of psychotherapy lens on yourself for a second. When something like, for example, for you, it's the older women and homelessness touches something deep within you, do you investigate that a bit more within yourself and go, why is it that thing that pushes that emotional button within me?
I am definitely 100% a woman that could be at risk of homelessness. I've had many occasions where my business failed and I had to shut the door, and I was very close to declaring bankruptcy and losing everything. Luckily, I came through it, but I've been in that place and I don't have any inheritance, to be honest. So even now, if I lost my career for any reason, I could be that woman at risk. So I think that we identify in some way, and I certainly identify as a woman that is at risk.
What do you think when someone comes up to you and says, gosh, you look amazing for your age?
It's so funny because it's one of those ones that, like, I'm conflicted. I know that I'm expected to see that as a compliment because I know that's the intention behind it. But with my work with Silver Science, I realise that, again, that's internalised ageism, because that's telling me, the person saying to me, that looking young is better than looking your actual age. So therefore, you should be super proud that you look younger than your age. So I'm always conflicted, but I always laugh because I know the intention and I go, okay, here we go.
Why are we not great with receiving compliments?
Because it's our natural impulse is to shut it down and to deflect it. Our brains are so much better at accepting criticism and negative things about ourselves than we are around accepting compliments. So we deflect. So I think we have to be super conscious when we get that compliment, just to stay really open and breathe and receive it.
What do your 60s hold?
I feel super excited about my 60s. I felt like that about my 50s, and I have to say it delivered. And that phrase that you see when I, you know, that thing of I knew it, I'll get better with age. I really sincerely believe that. And I felt that in my 50s, I'm going to get better. This is going to be, and it has delivered. And I believe the 60s are going to do exactly the same thing. I'm really excited.
Faith, it's been so wonderful to see you again. And thank you so much for dropping in and for your beautiful tea.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Insightful, an 8-part series from SBS, recorded in Sydney, Australia, on the land of the Gadigal people. Insightful is produced by Felicity Davey, Cassandra Allen and Kate Harassi, and edited by Maddox Foster. If you enjoyed this episode, please stay tuned for more. Until next time, I'm Kumi Taguchi. Thanks so much for your company.